Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC presents Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at robertsrobinson.com.
We have a whole bunch of great topics to cover here before Stan Weber joins us for our football feast from the weekend that was, and it begins with the Kansas City Chiefs 17-9 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars in an uneven performance, to say the least, for the Kansas City Chiefs offense. And there's really only two ways now to look at this football team. Two games in, there's two ways to look at it. One is extremely optimistic, and one would be pessimistic. And it goes something like this. Let's do the pessimistic part. It's easy to say the Chiefs are spoiled, that they've had a distracted offseason, that they're undisciplined, and their play reflects that. That they don't have enough talent at wide receiver, and Patrick Mahomes is going to struggle all season long to find guys that are open. That it just isn't what it was when the Chiefs had better players for Mahomes to throw to. And maybe even that Travis Kelce has lost a step, maybe a little more injury prone, a year older. It would be very easy to do that. The flip side of all this is, holy smokes, what if the Chiefs have one of the best defenses in the NFL? And how little will they have to rely on their offense until it's time to win a game? And we know how good the Chiefs' offense has been, and Patrick Mahomes in particular, when it's time to win a game. And this is what the win over the Jaguars looked like. This was unlike most Chiefs wins during the Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes era. The Chiefs very rarely have faced a good offensive team. Real threats. Maybe not an elite quarterback, but an upper echelon quarterback, a world-class receiver in Ridley, a good running game, and the Chiefs basically stuffed and stopped it all. And they did it as a team effort. Sure, Chris Jones being back was a big deal. You could see his impact right away. He had a big fourth down sack. He batted down a pass. He plugged up the middle. Chris Jones is a great player. He didn't alone make the defensive performance. He made it better. But the Chiefs' defense is really good. They're really, really good. They do a lot of things well. This is a different kind of Chiefs team. So the second way to look at this is, oh my gosh, this could be the best Chiefs team ever. What if these young receivers that really haven't shown much, if we're going to be honest, and they don't look that great. Kadarius Toney looks like he's got a burst to him. He caught some nice passes yesterday and ran with the ball after he caught it. We can see there's some talent there. What if this thing develops? What if they figure out what each player does individually pretty well and they work those things into the game plan? And by December, the offense is clicking, maybe not like it did when Tyreek Hill was here, maybe not the prolific numbers and scoring even of last year when Tyreek Hill wasn't here. But what if the Chiefs get back to being 85% of what we've seen them be, and the defense is the best yet in the Andy Reid era? Well, now that would be something, wouldn't it? How hard would the Chiefs be to beat? Because ultimately, the problem the Chiefs have when they lose games is they get into these shootout games, and you're up against terrific quarterbacks, terrific offenses, which maybe have just looked better because they're playing inferior Chiefs defense. We can make an argument now that the Bengals offense, maybe it's just sluggish early. Like maybe the Chiefs are just sluggish early. It's an early NFL season. But can you imagine if this offense gets better and improves and these receivers come along and the defense stays top notch? Because that was a world-class defensive performance. And that's not something we've seen a lot out of the Chiefs. And I just think it's very, very exciting. Really, truly exciting. I tweeted during the game yesterday that the Chiefs' body language is, and most of this is on offense, the Chiefs' body language is, this isn't fair. Something's going on here. We're getting ripped off. Travis Kelce's getting stupid personal foul calls. He's acting like a fool again. They're frustrated. They're acting like two-year-olds that, you know, at the high chair that can't have the Cheerios. They can't have the goldfish. They're like, I want my goldfish. You're not getting your candy. That's what they look like. And it was reflected after the game. Patrick Mahomes was asked about Juwan Taylor, the right tackle, who was called for 5 penalties. He got a false start. He lined up wrong, and he held. That was the 3 different penalties that combined to 5 penalties for one player, and they took him out of the game. Mahomes said after the game, it's hard when you get picked on. And yes, he was talking about Juwan Taylor, but the entire offense seems to feel this at this point. They seem to feel like the deck is stacked against them. They've lost a little of their mojo or something, or they're not focused. But as I watched the game, that's exactly what I was taking away from the Chiefs offense, is they felt like, hey, this isn't fair. This isn't right. Something's wrong here. The refs are out to get us. The other team's doing this, whatever it may be. You could sort of feel that with this Chiefs offense. We'll ask Stan Weber about it coming up in a few minutes, because I really saw a lot of that, and I was surprised to hear Mahomes' quote. I know it was about Juwan Taylor, but I think it maybe reflects the whole offense. I think they feel like they're being picked on right now. Like, all the league is out there reporting every little thing about the Chiefs to the NFL, and the NFL is watching the Chiefs more closely than every other team. Like, we're not going to let this team do what they've done before. Like, the deck is stacked against them. Last year, the motivation for this team somehow was they thought people on the outside didn't think the Chiefs were good enough to win. Now it appears the players on this team think maybe the league is out to slow them down or stop them, that the Chiefs have done too much winning, and it's good for business to have the Chiefs on national television losing a game, that that's fun, and that's good for people in other cities. And it may be, but I don't think there's some conspiracy out there. I don't think anybody's picking on the Chiefs. I just think they've got a lot of work to do. Somehow, in this sluggish offensive performance, the Patrick Mahomes threw for over 300 yards, and Isaiah Pacheco averaged nearly 6 yards a carry. He had the big 31-yard gain. Somehow the Chiefs were able to do that. So there's some good there, clearly, and they did enough to win this game, including racking up a bunch of yards with the ball up 17-9 to win the game. And they could have, honestly, they could have scored right there again at the end of the game and won 24-9, and we'd be going, well, that was a beatdown. So there's plenty to talk about with the Kansas City Chiefs. Stan Weber will join us in just a few moments. We will also talk about the Missouri Tigers, who got the 61-yard field goal from Meavis to beat Kansas State at the buzzer in one of the most incredible college football games between our local schools that we've ever seen. Truly, a game that will be remembered for decades by fans. Missouri students stormed the field. It was a wild celebration. They had to get Chris Kleiman out of there, you know, the security guys around him, because all the people were pouring onto the field. It was mayhem. Brady Cook threw for over 350 yards. Luther Burden was the best player on the field. No questions asked. He was the best player on the field. 7 receptions, 114 yards. Will Howard for Kansas State repeatedly threw into coverage and trouble, and he has the same problem that Mahomes has right now. Will Howard's receivers are not open. They're just not open. They're not scheming them open, or they're not good enough to get open. Luther Burden broke down the young K-State secondary multiple times, and they got confused. Safety confusion was a problem for Kansas State. This seems like a pretty simple game plan when you're playing the Missouri Tigers. See Burden over there? You're the safety. Don't ever let him get behind you. Ever. At any point. But Kansas State did. And when he wasn't getting behind him, they were throwing swing passes to him, and he was weaving his way through the defense because he's just too good and nobody could tackle him. That's an amazing athlete. He would look great in a Chiefs uniform. Can the Chiefs take Luther Burden right now? Because that would be awesome. That'd be bad for Missouri. Let him finish out the year. No, he's going to have to play another year after that, but wouldn't that be amazing? He looks like he is absolutely a superstar. Brady Cook, I'm paraphrasing here, I thought he had the money quote of the year in college football. He said, I love Mizzou. This is my dream job. I always wanted to play quarterback at Mizzou. I wish the fans felt the same way. They may, after this one. They may. What a great win for the Missouri Tigers. For Kansas State, wake up call. I honestly think they took Brady Cook lightly. I don't think they thought Missouri was going to score much on him. I darn sure don't think they were going to put up 30. My predicted score of this game was 27-20 K-State. I got the 27 right on K-State. I did not see Missouri scoring 30 points in this game. And I think K-State underestimated Brady Cook. And you know what? Maybe certainly everybody did going into this game. Everybody thought, okay, it's a pedestrian Missouri offense. Brady Cook doesn't have that take it up a notch game, but he took it up a notch, and they won the game. That being said, Kansas State, which is pretty good for, well, they're really good for a college team at managing the clock. They win close games. They know how to manage the end of the game. They absolutely blew this game at the end. Tie game, minute 36 to go. K-State is near midfield. They have 2nd and 15. Missouri's got a couple of timeouts left. Okay, there really is one goal at this point. You're playing the clock, not the scoreboard. If you're Kansas State, and they, Colin Klein and Chris Kleiman completely blew this. If you're Kansas State, the only thing you can't do is give the ball back to Missouri. You must at very least, okay, this is a game of turnovers. Missouri won the turnover battle. They did not turn the ball over. They took it away from K-State. And Missouri got the last possession of the first half and the first one of the third quarter. So Missouri was really plus two in this game. They were really plus two in turnovers, in possessions. That's basically what the game is, right? So Kansas State had that in their hands. Minute 36 to go. It's second and 15. Earlier in the game, they brought Avery Johnson in and run some nice quarterback run plays. Every single one of them, by my count, got at least 5 yards. Every time he did it, it got... That's the play. You run the ball or you toss a swing pass and you stay in bounds. And at the very least, you're gaining some yards to see what you have. Maybe you have third and eight. See what you have on the next play. Missouri wasn't going to burn one there, I don't believe. If they did, they did burn one. Make them burn them. If they burn two of them, now you punt the ball back to them with a minute 10 to go and they have no timeouts, which is an entirely different scenario. Kansas State blew that game. They threw incomplete twice. And Missouri had the timeouts and all the time in the world to go down and get the 61-yard field goal. Kansas State blew it with their game management at the end. You cannot, with a minute 36 to go, midfield, second and 15, you cannot allow your opponent to have the ball back. You simply can't do it. You have to play the clock first and the scoreboard second. Kansas played a Nevada team that obviously was hyped up and played much better than they played in their first two games. I stayed up till 1 in the morning on Saturday watching this and the Colorado game, which was amazing. We'll talk with Stan about all of this. But the Nevada team was much better than advertised. I would read more into the fact that KU struggled on this night. I'm very concerned about KU's defense. I just don't think you can look at what Nevada did and not be concerned about the defense. And Kansas has BYU this week. BYU went to Arkansas and won this past week. It looks like they got some grown men on that football team, and this should be a game. Kansas is a pretty big favorite in this thing. K-State's a pretty big favorite over UCF. They got some work to do. You can see that Kansas has some work to do. Hey, first road game, whatever, Jalen Daniels threw for almost 300 yards. They got the win. We won't spend a whole lot of time on Kansas because Nevada's not very good, and Kansas did struggle a little bit, but it was mostly on the defensive side of the ball. All right, KKHI is brought to you by Window World, simply the best for less. For a free analysis and estimate, call Window World at 816-799-0820. The best American-made windows, siding, and doors with lifetime warranties. Online at windowskansascity.com. Window World is the official windows of the Kansas City Chiefs. 360 Document Solutions. For your business in Missouri, Kansas, or Oklahoma, 360 would love the opportunity to show you how they can make your business just a little bit more efficient, run smoother, with fewer hiccups and speed bumps. When you have something go down at your office, whether it's copiers, printers, phone systems, whatever, when that goes on the fritz, who do you call? Who do you call? You probably, in all likelihood, don't have a local company. You probably look at an 800 number on the machine and call somebody and get somebody at a call center in India, and they can't help you. All right, 360 Document Solutions is there for you every single day, any single time you ever have an issue. They'd love to look at what you have, get you out of your current leases, or get you into newer equipment that costs less, functions better, and they back it up with world-class service. 360 Document Solutions, 913-745-5344. Dr. Jeremy Fry and his team at Fry Orthodontics. I'll be seeing Jeremy a little bit later on Monday. He's in a charity golf tournament that we'll be playing in with the Chiefs ambassadors over at Canyon Farms. I'm playing with Dr. Fry and two other dentists. Okay, I got an ortho and two dentists in the group. Are there going to be teeth jokes? I don't even know. I don't know how this will work. I'm going to find out. It's always fun to be around Dr. Jeremy. He's a good dude, and he loves to play golf. It's not his passion. His passion, I think, is travel and family and philanthropy and things like that, but he does like to play golf. We're going to have a good time today. Anyway, Fry Orthodontics is the place to go if you're looking for that perfect smile, online at fryorthodontics.com. And, of course, my buddy with his new business, Ron Buck, you know about Buck Roofing. Now there is Buck Disposal. This is a great new local company. He's got over 100 giant disposal dumpsters for your job site or your project. If you have a remodel project going on, if you're building, if you're in the tree business and you're doing all kinds of trash cleanup, you need dumpsters on a job site. Buck Disposal is there for you. It's online at buckdisposal.com. There's all kinds of different businesses that can use this. Municipalities can use this. Landscape companies. They'll even work with you on Saturday and Sunday. Service is everything. Local is everything with Buck Disposal. 913-242-7695. Online at buckdisposal.com. Okay, I'm going to do something here that I've never done before. I'm going to read a piece of the Patrons Post. We do the Patrons Post every weekend, and I enjoy writing it. And a lot of times it's kind of campy, and it's several topics and whatever. But every now and then I dive into something fairly serious. And I didn't want to avoid this topic on the Monday podcast, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on it because we got Stan Weber coming up. So I'm going to read for you the first couple pages of the Patron Post, and it has to do with the KU basketball player, Artario Morris, that is under investigation for an alleged rape at McCarthy Hall where the basketball players live in the condos. And so it goes like this. I'm not one to frequently hold coaches accountable for what their players may do off the field unless you know you're bringing in a troubled player. Marty Schottenheimer was desperate for offense and brought in Bam Morris and Andre Rison, and it became a mess. Andy Reid seemed to be in a personal bind when his sons were convicted, and he put them on his staff as terms of their probation. Sometimes it's a coach on a hot seat about to get fired that will take a player that others will pass on. You can pretty easily predict it won't work out when you analyze the situation and see a coach is reaching. Still, I've got plenty of exceptions. I was the only one in the Kansas City media that thought it was okay to draft Tyreek Hill. The case was closed, he was a free man, and the prosecutor in Oklahoma said at the time, in his experience, there's a 98% chance that nothing ever happens with Tyreek Hill again. That was good with me. The Chiefs weren't in some dire need, and Andy Reid does have a track record of bringing in some guys and having it work out, but not out of desperation. There's always been one coach that breaks every mold of normal analysis. Bill Self. Bill Self is a two-time National Champion Hall of Famer with a serious heart condition and an NCAA probation and suspension likely about to be dropped on him. What he's doing, paying a player in the transfer portal that was let go by Texas because of domestic assault, is beyond any explanation. But he did it. Artario Morris is a gifted guard that Self said he had no choice but to suspend on Friday. Not release, suspend. Let's take it from the start. Morris was arrested for assaulting a woman in Texas, would eventually just get probation because the victim signed a non-prosecution agreement. That's a payoff, folks. Morris is believed to be a mega millionaire in the making, and his agent and handlers will do whatever it takes to enable him. This looked like a totally hot mess when Self said this spring that he was, quote, comfortable welcoming, unquote, Morris to Lawrence and the KU program. They set the player up in McCarthy Hall, where 3 months later he's accused of raping an 18-year-old woman from Missouri. Nobody is commenting. Other players are listed as witnesses, but it's believed they had absolutely no role in anything. Morris has deleted his social media. KU police are investigating. Why? Why in the world does Bill Self subject himself to all this? I can only think of two reasons. One, he's completely addicted to winning. As he has proven during his career, he'll do anything to get players, anything. Or two, he's being enabled by a university that during an FBI scandal gave the man a lifetime contract as a big middle finger to the NCAA and a giant hug for their coach. As in most things in life, it could be a combination of the two. But at this point, what is the point of all this? With serious health concerns and a trophy case full of hardware, does Bill Self really want to just keep battling against everyone and everything? Rape allegations and assault allegations against his players are nothing new. And how do you explain that one of the most liberal public institutions anywhere, activist students, hard-left professors, and blind-eye administrators just don't care about protecting women as victims? This seems impossible at KU. Oh, and should we even bring up the KU police? This outfit is notorious for dealing with alleged crimes on campus, what appears to be a, quote, safe space campus for athletes, by never referring these incidents to Douglas County for consideration. If one didn't know better, you'd think all the alleged victims get big fat checks and nothing gets referred as a crime. You want to take bets on how this one ends? Remember, Artario Morris is suspended, not released. Douglas County officials now say they haven't heard a peep about any of this case from the KU police. Quote, it hasn't been presented to us, unquote, for charging consideration. But what's the worst part of what's going on with this campus incident? A rape was reported weeks ago in the KU men's basketball condo building. And the player was only suspended because the Kansas City Star filed a Freedom of Information claim against the school to get the details. It was then made public, and Self had no choice but to suspend the player, which, folks, he wasn't going to do. This is tiresome and old, and I write this with the utmost sincerity. Bill Self should be above this, better than this. If he wants to coach 10 more years, he should be squeaky clean now. Focus on charities, do a lot of baby kissing. He'll still win plenty of games. But if he completely changes how he does things right now, he can settle into that role of icon in the sport and be a feel-good story and only remembered for all the great wins and, well, look what a fine man he is. Or he can keep hoisting his middle finger to the world on a campus that puts him and his program above the rules and maybe even above the law. All right, that was in the Patron Post. If you'd like to get the Patron Post, if you sign up this week to be a patron, I will email it to you. Sign up by on your laptop or desktop. It's easier than on your phone. Go to kkasissues.com and get signed up. A couple of other news notes that are out there. These are just little nuggets before we bring Stan on. NBC News over the weekend, they're reporting that doctors around America, doctors, can no longer tell the difference between COVID, the common cold, and allergies without taking a COVID test. Now, maybe this is to make money for the pharmaceutical companies on the COVID tests. I don't know. But that's remarkable, folks, that doctors across America can no longer tell the difference between COVID, the cold, and allergies. Just had to get that in the podcast today. Also flying across the internet is Warren Buffett's fix for the national deficit. We've heard him say things like this before, but it's really taking hold. This sounds like a great law to me. Warren Buffett is proposing, he says, I can fix the national deficit in 5 minutes. Anytime the deficit of the U.S. government is more than 3% of the GDP, Warren Buffett says if we would pass a law that if it's ever more than 3% of GDP, members of Congress, that would be the House and the Senate, members of Congress are ineligible for re-election. So you can't run. If it gets to 3% of GDP, you can't run for office. New people will come in and clean the thing up. I think that sounds like a great idea. Warren Buffett with the simplest of solutions. Gotta love that. All right, Stan Weber's going to be joining us, and we love having Stan on the show. He is presented by the Bluemont Hotel in Manhattan. Bluemont and Goolsby's Restaurant and Indoor Entertainment Center is your business destination in Manhattan. Whether you work with the Department of Agriculture or the university upgrades and expansion that are taking place, Aggieville redevelopment, it's all right there. There's a lot of business going on in Manhattan, and it's great for seminars, training events, conferences, or social events. Log on to BluemontHotel.com. That's right, the Bluemont Hotel in Manhattan, or call them for group reservations for your party. BluemontHotel.com and Goolsby's Restaurant and Indoor Entertainment Center. Ideal Health KC may be just for you. This is regenerative medicine. It's stem cells. It's using your body's own tissue in places where your body needs it to get better. A consultation with Dr. Kip Van Camp could answer some questions that you have about your health situation that traditional doctors in medicine maybe haven't been able to help with. Tired of taking pills? Tired of prescriptions? Well, they do PRP blood spinning here. They do stem cell. It's taking your body's natural defense of illness and letting it work for you. IdealHealthKC.com. They're located in Shawnee. Call 913-745-5300 for Ideal Health. All right, here comes your football feast. It's time to bring Stan Weber on. Let's go over all of it from a big weekend in football on KKHI. Hit it!
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Joslyn's Jewelry, 95th and Antioch, or online at joslynsjewelry.com.
All right, Stan joins us now. We've got a lot of football to talk about. Stan, the Chiefs game was a mixed bag. We're not quite sure what to make of the receiving core and the offense, but wow, what if the Chiefs have a real defense? Hello, Stan, how are you?
I'm doing great, Kevin, and you're right. How about that Chiefs defense? That is, Chris Jones may get some big, bold headlines because he looked like the Chris Jones of old, and he dominated the game and made his $1.1 million, or maybe made a little bit more money if he can get those bonuses. But the whole defense, if you even take out the Chris Jones factor, they had their hands around that ball game the whole game. They were the biggest feature factor in the game. The Chiefs defense, just good.
okay, how do you explain it? There's an awful lot of young players. The secondary, I guess they're coming along now. They're 24, 25, 26 years old is a whole lot different than being 22 or 23. Is this just a maturation process, or do you see them doing something different, or some sort of different attitude?
There's no difference in the strategy. They're going to be aggressive and cover up any holes they have by blitzing, but they have interchangeable players that can get that done. I think L'Jarius Sneed, for instance, is just a Swiss Army knife type of player. If you want him to just lock down on the corner, he can get that done. But if you don't have the proper pass rush, you don't have the matchups you like, he can get after it. So can Trent McDuffie. Those guys can blitz the quarterback. But those young players that they drafted last year that stepped up, Kevin, have made the improvement. From year one to year two, being Super Bowl champions, playing as long as they did, they're not even close to being rookies anymore. So there's solid play across the board. Remember this time last year, you may not known it, but Justin Reed told us later, I didn't feel comfortable in the Chiefs defense for over half the season. It's just so complicated and what you got to do and how you got to get things done. Well, he is standing back there as a free agent signing from last year and now playing up to a very predictable level. But I think the biggest difference is the linebacking core. We have watched year after year after year, all the way back to Alex Smith years. Remember, I mean, Andy Reid's been able to win the division year after year, doing it many ways, and some of that is without good defense. And usually can't stop the run. Can't stop the run. Missed tackles at the linebacker level or right at the line of scrimmage where you should be stuffed on a short yardage play or make a tackle for a 2-yard gain. Instead, you miss it barely and it's a 7-yard gain. Linebackers, Kevin, Willie Gay has turned into a legitimate NFL linebacker. He's not just a fast player who came out of Mississippi State and you say, well, he can do things on passing downs. Now he's playing at a high level, and Nick Bolton is just covering the middle as well as any middle linebacker there is in football. And then they brought in other guys like Chanel and Tranquil, the third linebacking core. So what's really changed about this defense, Kevin, I think, is the linebacker area. Now it goes from what I thought was a little bit under par for teams in the NFL that were high-level division champions hoping to be Super Bowl teams to now being one of the best linebacking cores. And boy, does that make a big difference, because it doesn't matter if it's a pass or a run. Those guys are the variable that need to be in every play. So they may be making a tackle 9 yards downfield against a wide receiver or at the line of scrimmage. Those guys are really good. I think that's the difference. The grown-up attitude, the young guys got better in the secondary, but I really think it's the linebacking cores take the most big step.
I love that you point that out, because I'm a linebacker guy, and here's why. Everybody talks about the defensive line. Oh, you got to stop the run. You got to have pass rushers. Then they say, oh, you got to have a couple of stud cornerbacks and a traffic cop back there at safety. All that stuff gets the attention, and maybe it's unique to Kansas City. I don't know. I've yet to see a team with a very good linebacking core that didn't have a good defense, because they can do it all. They're so versatile. They can dominate so many areas of the field against that offense. That's where all the versatility is. And I feel like linebacker play doesn't get talked about much anymore. Oh, well, the best defensive player in the game is Micah Parsons, for crying out loud. How many different things can that guy do? I mean, that's what you're looking for in defensive players, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's old school to talk about it, Kevin. You know, you're bringing up a great point that you like linebackers. But what do we talk about the NFL? Because it's a passing game. Teams throw the ball more than they run. Literally, they throw the ball more than they run. That's kind of the way it's done. So how do you win games in the NFL? We got to be great on 3rd and 7. I'm the guy that says that. You know, who wins that 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7 battle? So usually you say, I need an edge pass rusher. Blow things up. When everyone knows we're passing the ball, can someone create havoc? And then you want a lockdown cornerback or a secondary that stays with those receivers and doesn't allow them to have open looks. Put one of those two together, and you really are going to be dominant. But no one talks about the linebackers anymore. I will present to you, Kevin, and I think you'll like this. You realize the linebackers are the ones who they're trying to bait into mistakes all the time. Why do you show any play action? You don't show play action for the defensive line, Kevin, because those guys know they're heading upfield and they want to go to the quarterback. And if it ends up being a run play, they just kind of slow down and try to cause havoc. The cornerbacks, oftentimes, they're backs to the football. Then you know what the play is. They're running downfield playing great man-to-man coverage. Do you know who are the decision makers on every single play? The linebackers. You're trying to mess with their eyes, with formations. When you put guys in motion, you're trying to slip tight ends out. You're trying to do play action to get them to step up and throw the ball right past their head to the area they could be in. But if they make great decisions and they don't take the bait and they read something, go, that's pass, not run, then they're back covering underneath and causing havoc. They may be able to blitz. They've got to fill in the run. Linebackers are the decision makers on every play. Everybody's defense, if you gave them, you know, X number of units, and then you say, how can you be better than that? Your linebackers make better plays, make better decisions. Don't get their eyes messed up and can tackle and not let guys get away. Don't let them fall forward. It's not something that the NFL emphasizes at all. But I'm telling you, if you have a great linebacking core, you said it well, that helps everybody out. Because then you are playing, if it's a run play, you got three extra guys up there helping stop the run. If it's a pass, you got three extra guys flooding the middle area of the field. So, yeah, linebacking play is a big deal. And Nick Bolton is a superstar, right? I mean, he is just, when he got injured, I go, oh, this is how. Okay, Kevin, this is how you don't win the Super Bowl the next year. What happens when he grabbed his ankle if he would be out for 6 or 8 weeks? And then you had Travis Kelce get injured, and you wonder, how are the Chiefs going to just be back every year to win the Super Bowl? It usually doesn't happen that way. I go, Nick Bolton is a big, big deal. But I think Willie Gay is the most improved player.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was, a talent. But you can attack him. The opponents can attack him. Right now, I think he is making great decisions, and he becomes a fast, physical player. So your old school mentality, Kevin, works. If you've got great linebackers, most teams don't have great linebacking cores.
Right.
What are they emphasizing? What are they drafting? What are they using their salary cap money for? Edge rushers, lockdown corners.
Well, I think my favorite part, we're going to get the offense here in a moment. My favorite part of this is the schedule looks like it. I can't believe how much easier the schedule looks without Aaron Rodgers on the Jets. I mean, just period. The Chiefs just faced a couple pretty good offenses, not elite, and pretty good quarterbacks, but not elite. Now they're staring at the Bears, the Jets, the Broncos twice in the next six games. I mean, this defense, they got a chance to be like at the bye week. The Chiefs have a chance to have like the number one rated defense. Well, probably not better than the Cowboys, but certainly in the top three in the NFL. They're getting ready to play some bad offenses and bad quarterbacks.
That's right, Kevin, and they deserve the credit because of yesterday's game. I thought it was a very dangerous game. I think Jacksonville's, in my opinion, like a diluted version or a young Cincinnati, you know, coming up the ladder. I think that Doug Peterson has really found himself as a head coach. I didn't know if Trevor Lawrence was going to be a great pro or not, but at the last half of last year, I thought when they came to Arrowhead, Kevin, and that team was young and wondering what the heck they were going to be. Remember the awful season they had under Urban Meyer the year before? They were all broken. But I think Doug Peterson brought them to Kansas City last year and said, here's the big boys. Study everything they do. Watch them in warm-ups, guys. They are the elite. Do you have any chance of learning from them and being at their level? And then he said, we're just going to do everything. We're going to go for fourth down. We're going to surprise onside. We're going to shoot our bullets at these boys. We're not going to back down to these Kansas City Chiefs. And I thought they played very well, kept the game close. In the playoffs, by that time, after that comeback against the Chargers last year, they were the real deal. They'd learned how to play at a high level, and I thought Trevor Lawrence finally got going. ATN is a good running back from Clemson who's now healthy. So I thought last year they took a step forward. I thought this was a very dangerous game going to Jacksonville. And all they did, Kevin, is squeeze the whole game.
I mean,
Trevor Lawrence did not play bad. They did not break him. He was not a young kid who didn't know what the heck's going on. He was a good NFL quarterback that kept his composure, kept trying to give him a chance. He just wasn't good enough.
And they dropped some balls, too. They dropped some balls, Jacksonville did.
But they were everything was hurried.
Yeah.
No play.
That's right.
If you're a Jacksonville fan, no play looked comfortable.
That's right.
And maybe it's a Chris Jones factor. I mean, Chris Jones did blow things up, but the coverage was always there.
Right.
They didn't allow him angles to get out and run. I'm telling you, the Chiefs defense, Kevin, was legitimately
really
so good
that
they forced the Jaguars' hands. He averages only 9.3 yards a completion in the game, barely hitting 50% of his passes, getting sacked. They didn't let Trevor Etienne get anywhere. He had 3.3 yards a carry. That defense was legitimate. First down to the end. They had to wait for the offense to wake up and get going. But, hey, you're right. This defense is putting up top 10 looking play.
I think it changes the way Andy Reid's going to coach offense here. I think it's okay to punt the ball, and we saw what he did. You can punt the ball. You can have some bad possessions. The defense keeps you in the game, and then he still went for a couple of fourth downs when it really mattered, when it's like, okay, this is the go time. We'll go for fourth down because we have Patrick Mahomes, and good things can happen. And it does. So I'm going to ask you this. A one-alarm fire, is like a frying pan on your stove. There's some grease caught on fire. A five-alarm fire is a skyscraper totally engulfed in flames. What is the Chiefs offense for you right now? Between one and five, how do you rate the alarms here for the fire that is the Chiefs offense?
I really only at one because you got Andy Reid designing the plays, best in the business. Patrick Mahomes, quarterback, best in the business. And as long as Travis Kelce is healthy, now he was not back to his normal self. He was knocking the rust off. That was not a good game for him. And yet he makes the critical touchdown, right? When they're scrambling and things are all messed up, the route did not work. The Chiefs are about ready to kick a field goal. And if you go back and think how close that game really was for most of the 3 hours, right? I mean, Jacksonville had a chance. He just maneuvers, spins, and makes himself available in the end zone for a touchdown. So Travis Kelce was a giant factor in the game, but I don't think he was his normal self. You know, he had a couple of penalties spouting off. They're getting underneath his skin. It's not because his knee's not working. He just had sat out a little while. It's not easy coming back from injuries. So I thought Travis Kelce was, 75% of his normal self and still a factor. So once he gets back to his normal self, how do you beat the Chiefs when you got those three guys going for you? Now, after that, I think you got plenty of questions, Kevin. The offensive line is not moving people off the ball into running game. There's basically no running game, okay? You can't count on blowing things up in the middle of the line where you got two guards and a center that are dominant players, you know, highly rated NFL players, and those guys can't get it done in the running game. The Chiefs are more a pass-blocking team, but their tackles have plenty of question marks about them. So I think the offensive line has question marks. I think the wide receiving core has, seven guys they kept? They thought they had eight NFL players. They kept seven guys, but you know what those guys are, Kevin? Equal, interchangeable, non-factors, right? I mean, the guy that he relies on most is Justin Watson. How often does he throw the ball to him? Because he runs the right route. He catches the ball. He can even be a deep threat. But does he scare anybody? If you're getting ready to play the Chiefs, Kevin, you look at anybody in the receiving core and go, oh, boy, they scare me. No. So the Chiefs are not, they're below average at wide receiver. And they are average at offensive line. And the running back position is just usable in certain situations. So they are below average. Yeah. So you got below average receivers and running backs, average offensive line. So yeah, the Chiefs offense isn't dictating to everybody else. They're not dictating.
They've built this thing saying we've got Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and that's going to be good enough and we'll just plug and play the parts, and that's what they've got. In most positions on that offense, they're plugging and playing parts. Okay, let's look around the league a little bit, Stan. Let's start with the division. Denver's awful again. I mean, the Raiders got drilled. The Chargers are 0-2. And so immediately as Chiefs fans, we start looking around the AFC. We don't even think about the division, which maybe is right, maybe it's wrong. We can talk about the division down the road somewhere. Let's see a few more games. But I look around the AFC, and obviously through two games, the two best teams in the NFL are the Cowboys and the Dolphins. The Dolphins just look ridiculous. Are they the top Super Bowl contender in the AFC, not named the Kansas City Chiefs?
It's unlikely they can continue to do it. I mean, is Tua really going to be healthy all 17 games? Is he not going to be beat up at the end? They need him to be the quarterback. They're so dangerous. And we spoke about it here year after year, Kevin, you and I, as a football player, have such respect for what Tyreek Hill is. I mean, he is dominant. That guy's dominant. And you're seeing it with the Miami Dolphins. He just totally changes every play. What they have to do to watch for him, the plays that he can make. Tua's doing fine. The coaching line, the defense played pretty well this game, didn't against the Chargers. So Miami's dangerous. Like, they are super dangerous on one given day, but they are not reliable at all. So no, I don't think that. I think what we've got here is a situation that going into the year, we said all the quarterbacks and teams that should win the Super Bowl are in the AFC. Wasn't that the theme last year, Kevin? Mm-hmm. And didn't we start this year with that same theme? But that theme's been turned upside down with Aaron Rodgers getting hurt for the Jets, with Bill Belichick's team 0-2 having lost two home games. You want to talk about reliable. You don't want to play Bill Belichick in the playoffs, okay? And the other team you don't want to play in the playoffs, Kevin, as a reliable team, is the Pittsburgh Steelers, okay? And they lost their first game, and I'm not sure where they're going to be. Most of these other teams have so many question marks about how do you grow up and play as favorites in the AFC. Actually, the best teams in football are probably the San Francisco 49ers, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys, and hey, maybe the Los Angeles Rams. All the Rams did wrong in their first two games is play against the team they can't beat in regular season, San Francisco. San Francisco's beaten them 9 straight times in the regular season. So it's just something bad happens. But the Rams are not very far away from being Super Bowl level team, remember, just a couple years ago. So the NFC has popped and looked good, very good in the first 2 weeks. It's quick. I can talk very quickly about the division. Chiefs got the division. It's done. We said that at the start of the last few years. I don't like saying that. I don't like saying that because I value winning the division. It is a big deal to win the division. Get that home game, Kevin, and to knock down the teams that you play. That is a big deal. I feel so awful saying this. But there's no way the Chiefs don't cover these teams. The Chargers are dangerous, but they're 0-2, and they're not well coached. And Herbert doesn't have a sense of urgency to have to make winning plays at the end. He's a likable guy.
He's Philip Rivers.
He just can't win.
It's the same thing as Philip Rivers. I just don't understand it. He's got all the talent in the world, and they don't win games.
And Denver and the Raiders just aren't good enough. They're developing new systems and trying to get things done with coaching changes and everything else, but they're just not in the same league. They're not. The Chiefs' division is the worst division in football. So the Chiefs don't have to be as good as they were last year. They're going to win this division,
okay,
Kevin. So you look around and say, where else you got to go to be the best team in the AFC?
I've got a theory on Russell Wilson that's different than everybody else's. Everybody else is like, oh, he's no good anymore. He's hit a wall, whatever. Tell me if you think this is crazy. My theory is Russell Wilson is the same player he always was. The game has changed in the last 5 years. The other quarterbacks have gotten way better. The offense is a lot more serious and intricate, and the game has just – the Chiefs have revolutionized the NFL over the last half decade. It's changed everybody, and Russell Wilson isn't good enough to change with it. Does that make any sense, or do you think he's just awful now?
No, I think you have a good point there. He's not the same age as he was in 2013 either, okay? He's a little bit chubby, I thought. He's trying to take care of that. He's a little bit distracted. Even his coaches called him out. Like, would you quit trying to be the mayor and just, you know, dress up in your proper clothing and say the right things after the game? Or, you know, he's hanging around like Hollywood type of attitude. And, you know, there's a lot of things going on. But he's an older guy who came in as a, undrafted free agent. I mean, maybe he was picked out of, I can't remember who's even drafted. But he wasn't thought to be a great quarterback when he came out of college. And he turned into a very, very good quarterback. But you're right, his game is about the same. And Pete Carroll, who's been an unbelievable coach at Seattle, wouldn't let Russ cook. Remember, that was a big subject, let Russ cook. And he's like, nah, let's play defense. Let's play good special teams. And let's run the ball first. And then let Russell scramble a little bit, throw the ball deep once in a while. He's a good deep ball thrower. But I thought that he would hit the reset button, Kevin, with new coaching with Sean Payton. But it didn't work out. They're 0-2. I mean, if they would have made a few plays here or there, Denver could have been dangerous. If they could have got confirmation in their first two games, Russell has a capability of playing at a high level in the NFL, but he wasn't good enough to get it done. Down at the goal line, he looked old and slow. And their
defense got worse. How did Denver's defense just get worse with Sean Payton? It looks awful.
Well, they had a great defensive coordinator as a head coach 2 years ago, and they lost him, right? Yep. So they lost their great coordinator, and now they're relying on offense. Sean Payton's an offensive guy. Anyway, Denver going into the season, I would have said, watch and see what they might do. They could become dangerous. I think they're going to play solid football, and I think Russell Wilson's going to play better.
Yeah.
Well, pop that bubble, okay? They're 0-2.
It's fun.
And
to
no
watch
one feels
fail.
Good about anything they are doing.
No.
The Raiders should be a little bit better. But I'm just saying, Chiefs have got this division covered. It's the worst division in football. So it's how are the other three teams. It's not just how good you are. It's how good the other three teams are. They're not ready for prime time. The Chargers are dangerous as heck in a one-game setting. If the Chiefs are playing the Chargers this week, you'd go, this could be a toss-up game. Because when the Chargers put it together, they can play at a high level.
Yeah,
but they rarely do, even for a full game.
Yeah.
They played great. Kevin, if you take out one half of football, if I said, okay, I'm going to give you 6 possessions of football, offensive defense, so that's 12 total possessions. I'm going to show you the tape of every team in the NFL. I'm telling you, if I showed you just half the game of the Chargers' first two games, you and I would be sitting here going, that's one of the best teams in the NFL right there. That team has it, man. Look at that.
Yep.
And then what were the scores of the games? L losses. Yep. And you can't overcome that. When you're trying to develop your program, you can't start 0-2. So the Chiefs got that, and the AFC looks like they're giving the Chiefs room to learn and grow, because the Chiefs lost to Detroit. Shouldn't have happened. But the schedule, when the Chiefs play 3 of 4 games, starting in the game at Jacksonville, 3 of 4 games are on the road. It looks like it should be a challenging time. But with Aaron Rodgers not playing for the Jets, you suddenly don't feel that bad about Chicago at the Jets, at Minnesota. So the Chiefs are in great shape. They're not to the level they need to be. They're still, for some reason, transitioning out of preseason into regular season, like a lot of teams do. But two of the main reasons might be, Chris Jones wasn't there the whole time.
Right.
And your superstar Travis Kelce at tight end didn't play in the first game. I think the Chiefs' arrow is definitely pointing up. They get more healthy here against Chicago at home. Things start rolling. I don't know how high they can go, because we just questioned offensive line, wide receivers, and running back. This is not going to be easy for Patrick Mahomes. You know how often he has to run for first downs? Go back and watch a tape of the first 2 weeks.
Yeah.
He has to put the team. This is like John Elway on offense. Remember when John Elway just took the whole team and said, we're going to win? Patrick's doing a lot of that right now. Let's just make sure that he doesn't get hit. So far, he's been able to slide and get out of bounds and do things to protect himself a little bit. And it's weird how defenders don't hit him.
No,
weird. Like their favorite. They let him go another 5 yards by just bumping him. It seems like they would rip him, but I think they're scared of getting a 15-yard penalty or a fine. The NFL gives those guys fines if you hit somebody in the head or something. So far he hadn't got beaten up, but he's carrying a lot of loads, Kevin. He's scrambling for first down.
And I feel like they'll need that this year more than most years, just because, based on the weapons on the offensive side of the ball.
But the defense, it's nice to have a good defense, awesome. Man.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yep. And it a win fixes a lot, and the Chiefs' arrow is pointing up. Let's talk a little college football here, Stan. The Missouri Tigers get a win for the ages. I think most people who were at that game will remember that forever and maybe even be talking about it 30 years from now. A 61-yard field goal as time expires. Missouri got the best non-conference win in the SEC this year, or it appears. I mean, those are a really, really good win for the Missouri Tigers. I thought it was not unlike the Chiefs-Jaguars game. I thought it was sloppy on both sides. At times, both teams looked like they were playing giveaway. But at the end, I thought Luther Burden was the best player on the field. Kansas State's defense let him get behind on one big play. He kind of scissored his way through on some short passes and made some big gains. I just thought he's a really, really great player, and Brady Cook played his best game ever, and Missouri gets a huge win for that program.
Well, a huge win, because going into the game, Eli Drinkwitz is 19-19. He's in his fourth season, and there's all kinds of question marks around the team. He mentioned it in postgame. I was pretty sure I heard it, but he mentioned it in postgame that when they announced the starting players on the video board, when they said Brady Cook, there were boos. Not everybody, but boos that you could hear, that they didn't think he should be the quarterback. A lot of people think Sam Horn should be the quarterback. So this is not an easy situation for Eli Drinkwitz. If you don't have your quarterback figured out, it's hard to win. And they had not started any of his first 3 years, even 2-0. So here they were at 2-0 for the first, and then they get the biggest win, the highest-ranked team they've won against K-State. They bounce back from a 40-12 loss last year in Manhattan to come back and win. So now they are 3-0. They get Memphis in St. Louis, where they're the favorites, and then they play Vanderbilt. They have a big chance to get some momentum and go 5-0. So just a giant game for them. They split in the series with K-State and Missouri. Probably aren't going to play each other very much, unfortunately, in football, and they hadn't played for a while, but they had a 2-game series, and Missouri can now go out and say, hey, we split. You know, we each won at home. We're about equal. That's a pretty good statement for Mizzou. Their best player on the field is Luther Burden. He was dynamic, and he got 114 yards receiving, and he made some giant plays, 2 touchdowns that were incredible. He was a guy K-State had to watch. What people may not know is that the receiving corps for Missouri is pretty good. Theo Weiss was a starter for Oklahoma last year, Kevin. So, you know, you want to talk about Luther Burden, but they've got Mookie Cooper, Micah Miller, and especially Theo Weiss. These guys can make plays. The receiving corps for Missouri is really good. The question is the quarterbacking, right? So Brady Cook, a lot of questions around him. Was he good enough to get it done? The issue for Missouri is not only thank you, Brady, for playing an unbelievable game, his first 300-yard game of his career, and he was dealing, throwing the ball deep, Kevin. He He missed one throw barely when he read a blitz perfectly late in the game and hit Luther Burden on the fingertips. He did everything right, threw for 356 yards, and he's not thrown for 300 yards in his career. He ran the ball. He played physically. He got knocked out of the game, showed toughness, and came back. He did so many things that he was the difference in the game. You would not expect him to have played that well, and he played the game of his life. Now, the question for Missouri fans is, did that vault him to another level? Can he replicate this? Can he be a new quarterback? Because if he plays at a high level and Missouri has a quarterback question answered, and the schedule the way it lays out with the momentum this year and a solid defense, you could be very, very excited about where this Missouri team will go. So the biggest question that Mizzou fans have is, do you think Brady Cook's going to replicate some of this? Is he going to be a good throwing quarterback in addition to having the capabilities to run, or was this a one-game aberration? Either way, they're going to give him a big hug because they wanted to beat K-State. Rivalries matter, Kevin. That was fun. And for K-State fans, not fun. But that's what a rivalry is about. There is much more pain right now for K-State fans to having lost to Mizzou than lost to Tulane at home last year. Because you know what Tulane did? Quietly went back to New Orleans, and you never heard from them again, right? I mean, they were a great team and went to a bowl game, the Cotton Bowl last year. Tulane was really good, but that wasn't as painful for the K-State fans because there's no rivalry factor. You don't have to go to work with fans from the other team. This game had all of that rivalry factor, plenty of bragging rights, opportunity for Mizzou, and pain for K-State. But this may be the game that vaults them. Remember when Will Howard wasn't someone that K-State fans believed in, Kevin, last year? When I talked well about him early in the year, people were like, well, I don't know. You know, he has a losing record as a starting quarterback. But when he lit Oklahoma State up, remember when they were ranked 9th in the country, and he lit them up, he never looked back. He became a reliable, big-time quarterback. So there's a chance that this may be the game that vaults Brady Cook to a whole nother level. If not, if he goes back to being up and down, K-State fans are going to be hitting their head against the wall going, can you believe this guy played the greatest game of his life in that game?
K-State played it. I thought they played their worst game in quite some time, and I didn't think Will Howard was very good either. He's forcing a lot of passes. He's thrown into traffic. So I'm not going to be overly critical. You can have bad games. The thing that bothered me most about Kansas State, Stan, was they're pretty good at managing the clock and managing the game. K-State does the little things. They're well-coached and all that. I thought a lot of that was missing in this game. And I noted earlier in the podcast, with a minute 36 to go, the Wildcats were near midfield in a tie game, and they had second and 15, and they threw two incomplete passes. I just felt like you got to run the ball on one of those plays, or a little swing pass that you're guaranteed to complete and stay in bounds, something, a shovel pass, something that is safe that keeps the clock running a little bit. The number one thing, and I was screaming at the television, you cannot give the ball back to Missouri here. It's 27 all, and hey, if it goes to overtime, it goes to overtime. You want to go win the game, but the one thing you can't do is give them the ball back. And I thought K-State kind of lost the discipline of what they are there, getting greedy, thinking, oh, we'll make a play here. Howard's going to throw it downfield. We're going to go kick our field goal and win this thing. I appreciate wanting to go win the game, but man, with a minute 36 to go, you can't throw two incomplete passes. That was a killer.
Yeah, and you know, you got to give Missouri some credit for pressing K-State and then also knocking a football away. Tyron Hopper, their linebacker, knocked the ball away one time from Ben Sennett, which was a critical in the game. And K-State had their ups and downs. Obviously, when they're at the 3-yard line, they got a delay of game. It's just by a second or two, but they got a delay of game, which made it 3rd and 8. Big advantage defense. They ended up settling for a field goal at that time to just tie the game rather than go from the 3-yard line, maybe even with 2 plays to get in and get the lead and put real game pressure on Mizzou. So in a game that's this good, this close, if you're a neutral fan, you're saying, what a great football game. And there was enough excellence and positiveness and excitement that you look at that and you can look past some of the inefficiencies. If you're a fan of that team, you're looking at little things. And like Mizzou took a delay of game at the end of the game that made that field goal 61 instead of 56 yards. What happens if that would have cost them by 2 or 3 yards on a field goal and then they lost in overtime? We'd be splitting every hair about what Mizzou did wrong and the coaching staff and everything else. So, yeah, the teams are not playing at perfect performance level. Part of that is the pressure was big. You could feel it, Kevin. That game mattered. Yeah, there was a lot of K-State fans, and Mizzou was there. The weather was just weird enough. It was raining at times. It wasn't a sunny day. And we do not, Kevin, at all. The pros refuse to use the preseason three games to get ready, right? And the colleges don't have preseason games. And, oh, by the way, they don't want to work too hard in fall camp. They don't want to get guys injured. They don't want to hit very much. So it takes a little while for everyone to hit on all cylinders. And when you play your first super close game where every second matters, you know, everyone's got to, you know, sharpen the pencil a little bit more. And you saw that. But it was back and forth. Each team caused the other team to make a lot of these mistakes, I believe. I thought the big factor was in a game. I said, you know, if Missouri could win the tournament battle, that would be a big step forward. If Missouri could get the ball to Luther Burden or Nate Pete and get some big plays, that would be able to get things done. That was their chance.
They did it.
Home field advantage. The home field advantage is big. That's the 16th straight win they've had at home in non-conference opponents. So all those things came into play. But what I didn't think was that Brady Cook would go off. Go back and look at his plays, Kevin. Which one do you give him a minus? I mean, running, throwing, the accuracy, the pressure, the catches those guys made. And in the face of K-State, K-State went down and led 7-0. And Missouri could have gone, we are in trouble. And they drove the ball down the field and scored. Every time K-State punched them in the mouth and said, we are here, we're the 15th ranked team in the country, we beat you 40-12, and we have the lead. Every time Brady Cook threw rifle shots.
That's terrific.
Beautiful long passes. So the question is that his one game of his life, which Mizzou fans should take, or is he learned to play at a whole other level? I don't know which it is. But both of them are pretty good news for Tiger fans.
All right, let's take just a couple minutes here to wrap up and talk about Kansas. I've got a problem, man. I watched football till after 1 a.m. on Saturday night. I couldn't stop watching the Kansas and the Colorado State games. They were on late, and I was just vegging out, and I should sleep more, and I don't know what's wrong with me, but I couldn't not watch them. And, the takeaway here from Kansas is their defense isn't very good because Nevada's not a very good team, and Nevada was able to do some things against Kansas. Forget Nevada. It's a road game, whatever. BYU comes calling this week. BYU just wanted Arkansas. I don't know much about BYU, and I didn't see their game, but they got my attention with that win. Seems to me this could be a game for the Jayhawks this week.
Yeah, it's going to be a really good game because I think BYU is playing better than we expected them to, Kevin. I did watch that game, and, man, Arkansas came out and just punched BYU in the mouth. It was all Arkansas. And they're at home, and it's an SEC team. And this is the best of Arkansas because they've been up and down, right? Okay. When you look at KJ Jefferson's play, sometimes he's like the biggest, strongest quarterback, could not lose to anybody. And other times he just looks like he can't complete a pass. So which is it? Looks a little slow. Arkansas came out and looked so good at the start of the game. They were ahead in the first quarter, 14-0. With 11 and a half minutes left in the first quarter. And BYU fought back from that. Very impressive. And they continued to have to fight, but they were the better team. After the first 5 minutes, you give or post a 14-0 deficit in an SEC game on the road at night against Arkansas. That was impressive. So BYU will bring they're a very good team. But I thought Kansas deserves a bunch of credit. It's hard to go on the road when you're a giant favorite. You play at a weird time at night. Everything about their travel schedule is weird. But if you can bank a road win in your KU's program where you get used to getting in a plane and all the behind the scenes of being a real human being, it's luxurious travel, Kevin. I do it all the time. I'm not saying that. Not compared to normal people. But compared to home games, it wears on your body. Playing at that body clock time at 9:30 at night, KU fought through and got a win. And that's a positive. They're 3-0. Really doing some good things. They'll be much more fired up against BYU and ready to play. It looks like a pretty even game. I got to give an edge to KU because they're at home, and I think they'll be hard to beat. But BYU impressed me a lot because when Arkansas got ahead 14-0, I wasn't down on them like, you guys stink. It's more like Arkansas is playing at a high level tonight, and all of a sudden BYU is the better team the rest of the way. Arkansas was scrambling to keep up with them. So, very impressed with what BYU did. We get a conference opener. Big game. What a big game. Because if BYU can enter the conference with a win on the road, then they're going to say, why can't we get to the top of this conference? You know what BYU is made of? They're like an independent, like Notre Dame. They don't think like other teams that just are so happy to be in the Big 12. They thought of themselves as a national power forever. If they can get confirmation and do it, get a win, that will vault their football team and make them much better the rest of the season. But if Kansas can go to 4-0, winning begets winning, yeah, Kevin. It every year is a new year, and confidence is a big, big factor. And Kansas could be a factor in this race. This second place in the Big 12 is wide open. If you believe that Texas is going to be one of the two teams in the championship game, I could name six teams probably that could say, why not us?
Right now, I think Oklahoma tops that list right now. They look really, really good.
Plus, their schedule is really easy. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be hard to outpace Oklahoma. The schedules are not equal now.
No.
It's not like it's everyone plays the same nine teams.
Yeah.
OU catches a big break. They don't play K-State. Yeah. They play Texas in a neutral site game, and their non-con was super easy.
There you go.
So Oklahoma is going to be a dangerous team.
It's on. It's on, Stan, and you are on, KKHI. We appreciate having you here, and we look forward to catching up with you again real soon. Great analysis as always, buddy. You are the best. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. Have a great week.
All right, he is Stan Weber. You won't get it any better than that. We just love our time talking with Stan. Great analysis there on the Chiefs, I thought, and he's, I think, pretty optimistic that the Chiefs' offense is going to step it back up a little bit, that the wide receivers will come along. That'll obviously be a big difference. So great stuff there from Stan Weber. Brought to you by Back 9 Development, online at back9development.com. TJ Vilkanskas and his team can build for you. If you can dream it, he'll build it. Custom homes, commercial projects, back9development.com. You want to meet TJ and talk about your dream and see if it meets the reality? Just give him a call at 785-236-0161 for back9development.com. The new car image. Come on, guys, clean your car up, man. I'm not talking about some overpriced car wash where the kids streak your windows. I'm talking about perfection. TheNewCarImage.com. Get her detailed. She deserves it. Come on, spiffy that thing up, and I mean get it right. They'll come to you, to your home or your business. TheNewCarImage.com, 816-499-1470. Brad will hook you up with your car looking better than when it came off the showroom floor, I promise. TheNewCarImage.com. And Tim Cross and his team at Cross Kitchens KC. I was over at my buddy Tony's house yesterday. Their man cave, I'm not supposed to call it a man cave, okay? Their basement recreation entertainment level is freaking gorgeous. Cross Kitchens completed the entire thing. I'm going to take some pictures, I guess, and put them on Twitter. You got to see this. It is... I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. It is remarkable. It's him. You did an unbelievable job over there at Tony's house. They're so happy. And it has just completely changed the way they live in their home. You can do it too at your home. Call Cross Kitchens KC at 816-898-7047. Online at crosskitchenskc.com. More than kitchens, man caves, bathrooms, you name it. They did the bathroom down there in the bedroom, the whole level. They remodeled the whole level of the house. Remarkable work by Cross Kitchens, online at crosskitchenskc.com. We're off and running. Okay, conference season starting now. Not for Missouri, but for KU and K-State, the conference season starts. That's on. The Chiefs, I think, get a lull in the schedule. I mean, I can't imagine them having too much trouble with the Bears on Sunday. Bears are coming in for a 325 kick. We look forward to that one. Then it's the Jets without Aaron Rodgers, the Vikings who just know how to lose, the Broncos a couple of times in 3 weeks. I think we're going to see some winning in our future very, very soon. And I thank you for listening to KKHI.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.